Hey, SG3 is SG3. All right, make sure you're in fellowship as we here will wind up. Genesis 19, we are looking at the offspring of the incestuous affair of Lot's daughters with their father. That is none other than Moab and Ammon, Ben-Ammon. And one of the first things unique in regards to his offspring is that God gave them real estate. Now that is brought out in Deuteronomy 2, 9 and 19. But this does not mean that everything is hunky-dory in regards to the offspring in this regards. It does point to, again, the difference of judgment that is the lesson, if you will, that is brought about, primary lesson in regards to this section of God dealing with believers versus unbelievers, and that Lot and his daughters were believers, albeit reversionists otherwise. And the aspects of the characteristics of the offspring shows that Moab and Ammon both were oppressors of Israel, and they were a bad influence on Israel. This based on Israel's unwillingness to separate themselves from them. They are noted of pagan cultic religions, worshiping such as Chemosh, Baal, Peor, Milcom, and Moloch. Most of these were pagan gods that promoted phallic reversionism, including child sacrifice. And 79, where we left off, page 36, worship of Moloch involved sexual perversion and child sacrifice. Of that particular God, Leviticus 18:21. Neither shall you give instructions to Israel, any of your offspring, to offer them to Moloch, nor shall you profane the name of your God. I am the Lord. The degradation again of the reversionists can go quite low. Parents sacrificing their children in a mystic approach regards to life, as if it's going to benefit them sexually or prosperity otherwise. Leviticus 20, verse 2. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, verse 2, you shall also say to the sons of Israel, any man from the sons of Israel or from the aliens sojourning in Israel who gives any of his offspring to Moloch, the god of the Amorites, shall surely be put to death. People of the land shall stone him with stones. And then 2 Kings 23:10. He also defiled Topheth, which is in the valley of the sons of Hinnom, that no man might make his son or his daughter pass through the fire for Moloch. 80. It is ironic, if nothing else, that Lot's incestuous offspring begat future sexual deviance. The trend tends to carry on if it's not abruptly dealt with in regards to doctrine. 81. Maybe Moses just let history be its own commentary on this situation. One which the Jews would be, and his readers, readily familiar with in history in this regards. So again, there's no need for Moses to slam Lot in the situation. It speaks for itself. It is one of the doctrines of the blatantly obvious. History itself proves the errant activities that are at hand and the bad repercussions that come from it in association in that respect. 82. Lot and daughters are representative of reversionist believers that God delivers apart from his judgment on unbelievers. 83. Even living a life of degrading STA pursuits, they still have a place in the plan of God personified in Deuteronomy 2, 9 and 19. God giving them real estate illustrates that, albeit Lot's daughters and Lot himself were reversionists, they were still believers. And hence, they still have a place in the plan of God compared to the unbeliever who is cut off from God for all eternity. So 84, to close out the Sodom and Gomorrah affair here. 84, Operation Sodom and Gomorrah is a paradigm of divine judgment. Any nation, Jewish or Gentile, can expect such treatment if it flouts God's standards and spurns his call to repentance. Those voices who may stand up and reproach the sexual perversions and vices of society in our country are screamed down usually by the perverse themselves and other liberals who have their own perversions and like to mask their perversions with other people's perversions. See. So, whoever they may be can expect God to ultimately overrule and intervene, especially on a national level. And for us, political Babylon, our culpability is extremely high before God with respect to allowing this activity to exist within our society running freely otherwise. 85, Jesus warns that towns that rejected him or his messengers are more to blame than Sodom, to denote the culpability factor involved in regards to these things. Matthew 10, 15. Truly I say to you, it will be more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of judgment than for that city. That looks at the great white throne judgment. Those who remain in unbelief in spite of the evidence of their very Messiah performing miracles and proclaiming the truth otherwise. Culpability does play a large factor in regards to how God intervenes and deals with people. Not to, if you will, dismiss guilt or blame otherwise. Everyone is still culpable. 86, Jesus compares his second coming in judgment to the flood, the evils of Noah's generations, or the overthrow of Sodom, the evils of that particular society. Luke 17, 26 through 32. In regards to prophetic information concerning the Lord's return, second advent, and just as it happened in the days of Noah, so it shall be also in the days of the Son of Man. Looking forward to the era, the tribulational period. They were eating, they were drinking, they were marrying, they were being given in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark and the flood came and destroyed them all. For the rest of the world, it's just life as usual. That's all people are concerned about, is generally their own pursuits, etc. And then it's going to come down on like a ton of bricks. In verse 28, it was the same as happened in the days of Lot. They were eating, they were drinking, they were buying, they were selling, they were planting, they were building. Society looks like it's continued to be progressive in regards to those things that they accomplish, nations, towns, etc. And then, out of nowhere, one morning, when the sky looked blue, and you got, oh, warm weather today, it's going to be beautiful. Verse 29, but on the day that Lot went out from Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from heaven and destroyed them all. Verse 32, remember Lot's wife. Remember Lot's wife. She is given a nod in regards to her example of reversionism and to the exhortation, obviously, in essence, is to desire or seek to embrace these things, to look back on these things. Otherwise, is not archaic. It is the reverse of that which is good and right in life. See, that's one of the arguments that the homosexual populations like to give in regards to Christians or others who refute their nonsense, and that is that they're just not up with the times. They're archaic. They're living in the past. No, they're the ones living in the past. They're the ones going back to the vomit of reversionism, as it might be, in regards to societies. And for the believer who wants to look in that direction for themselves, remember Lot's wife. All right, chapter 20. Moving on here. In chapter 20, we have the Abimelech affair that takes up the entire chapter. Before looking at the details, there are some preliminary considerations and doctrine that we need to revisit to truly appreciate what's going on here. So, one, chapter 20 here in Genesis. Finds its full disclosure of doctrinal teaching only by comparison to chapter 19. Otherwise, you go through 20 and it's just another incident in the life of Abraham without any really depth of meaning apart from he messed up again. To have the full flavor of what's going on here. Doctrine is to be understood with doctrine. So the full disclosure, the full impact of what is designed to be seen here in chapter 20 goes beyond just the surface of events in this regards. And it needs to be compared back to chapter 19. Two, that is back-to-back records of two believers, Lot and Abraham, guilty of sin and fear. Guilty of sin and fear. Lot and now Abraham. Lot replaced his monetary reversionism with fear. And that's how chapter 19 closes out. Now all of a sudden we jump to chapter 20 and we got Abraham. A different caliber of believer altogether. But he's operating under fear. He's effectively engaged in the same type of sin that Lot did on the surface. So when you compare 19 to 20, you have back-to-back records of two believers guilty of sin fear, Lot and now Abraham. Three, this more specifically, as it pertains to Lot, the negative reversionist, compared to Abraham, the positive adjusted believer. For while both acts of sin are of the indwelling STA, sinful trend of Adam, and include lack of faith rest on both parts, there are distinct differences. A, Lot's fear was perpetuated, operating under God's permissive will geographically, resulting in a life manipulated by STAs, his two daughters, which is indicative of leading to sin and to death. 19, verses 18 through 20, and verse 30. Again, God's directive will and geographical will for Lot was not to settle in the plain of the Jordan Valley, but to go straight to the mountains. Lot begged to stay in Zoar in the plains otherwise, not going to the mountains. Therefore, he opted, which God permitted. That was not God's preference. That was not his divine directive. See, you got to understand the difference between God's directive and permissive wills. He permitted Lot to go to Zoar. And in so doing, Lot essentially abandons God's geographical will for him. And then he ends up, in so doing, exiting this world, being manipulated by the STAs of his two daughters, which puts him in a pathetic role, and one can not think above sin and the death of living a life in such fashion. Now, on Abraham's side of the coin, B, as we will observe, Abraham's sin is not in violation of God's geographical will. He acknowledges his sin in verses 11 through 13, albeit it is confession given to Abimelech. But he shows his intellectual honesty in regards to it, because Abimelech, why did you do this? Because I thought surely there is no fear of God in this place. They will kill me because of my wife. Besides, she's actually my sister, the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother. She became my wife. And it came about when God caused me to wander from my father's house. But I said to her, this is the kindness which he will show to me. Everywhere we go, save me. He is my brother. He didn't try to lie his way out of it. He fully acknowledged the sin. And continuing, point B, subpoint B, and remains as a witness, resulting in blessing to others. Throughout the whole ordeal, God is still for Abraham. God is still promoting Abraham. In fact, Abimelech is the one that is under dire straits here in the situation, all because of Abraham's disobedience or running under his STA otherwise. And God continues to bless him, and he becomes a blessing, a source of blessing on Abimelech and his household's part, because it is through his prayers that Abimelech, God removes the death sentence upon Abimelech's head. And we see that. So there's some major differences here in the lives that we see between Lot and Abraham, even though they both are operating under their sin natures, if you will, in this respect. So 5, chapter 20 is designed to illustrate the differences of sin in the life as it pertains to perpetual sinning and reversionism versus incidental sinning experienced by even the positive adjusted believer and God's attitude towards said believers. That is to see the full measure and appreciation of chapter 20. And only by contrasting it, Abraham now, to Lot back in chapter 19, can one truly see what's going on. So 6, Lot's experience, in contrast again, only finds blessing by association, because of his association by with Abraham, his positive 1929, and God remembered Abraham. See, instead of God remembering Noah, the direct recipient of the deliverance, God remembered Abraham. That is because Lot was being blessed by Abraham's positive volition in that respect. So Lot's experience only finds blessing by association. And God is conspicuously vacant from the rest of his life, that which closed out chapter 19, verses 30 and following. God, you don't see God in that at all, or anymore in regards to his life. Continuing point 6, then, while Abraham continually enjoys God's intercession on his behalf throughout this sinful ordeal in chapter 20, and then, again, he's there still after the fact in chapter 21, 1 and following, as God remembers Sarah and the promises, the heir to them, which becomes the item of revelation in that chapter 21, 1 and following. Then the Lord took note of Sarah as he had said. So, the inquisitive person would say, well, you know, they're both engaged in sin. Why is it different for one than, and from the other in this situation? 7, chapter 20 makes clear that, quote, there is not a righteous man on earth that continually does good and does not sin. Ecclesiastes 7:20. It truly reflects upon the erroneous thinking that somehow one who is positive and adjusted otherwise to God's plan for his life, that he needs to be, or she needs to be, sterling, squeaky clean in regards to their life, remiss of failure otherwise, or omitting failure otherwise in their lives, and that somehow, you know, they're above sin. That comes, obviously, from the very attitude of one who does not understand God's grace and does not understand what God's looking for in regards to people. To embrace them, to bless them, etc. It's based on positive volition. Sin a life, while it is not to be dismissed or looked down upon otherwise, anything less than being sin, is still a fact of life. And because one is a believer, even positive, one whom God gives a covenant to, doesn't mean that somehow they are going to be perfect in regards to their life. 8, the fact is, positive believers are victims of their own SCAs, and that often on a repetitive basis. Romans 7:15, Paul himself understood this principle quite clearly. Yeah, he's an author of Scripture. God superintended in his penning of the words of the epistles that we find in the New Testament. He was highly motivated as a positive believer. We understand that of Paul. But don't think Paul didn't have his daily struggles with his own STA, just like every other believer that is trying to walk down the straight and narrow of life. And knowing the doctrine of the sin nature is essential in regards to maintaining proper balance and approach with respect to evaluating, critiquing ourselves, others around us. And he says, verse 15, for that which I am doing, I do not understand. For I am not practicing what I would like to do, but I am doing the very thing I hate. Sounds like to me he's engaged in some sinning. He's not following God's directive in everything that otherwise his soul, his human spirit said, this is what's right. How does that, or why is that? That is because he possesses an STA. as long as we're alive in this body. Our SCA will tug at us and do all that it can to convince us to engage in that which is unrighteous. And believers truly fall victim to it, even the best of believers. It's not just one time, and you would think, well, they've learned their lesson. No, the SCA is that powerful. It often happens on a repetitive basis because of one's dominant SCA trend, etc. So again, the fact is, point eight, positive believers are victims of their own SCAs, and that often on a repetitive basis. Nine, this explains in part, at least, why Genesis records two parallel incidents of Abraham's sin regarding Sarah finding herself in the harem of two different rulers on two different occasions. I've kind of, in the back of my mind, I have wondered about that over the years. Why did God record this twice? I mean, it shows that He's not perfect. But it shows that He's not perfect on a very real level. See? And by looking at and contrasting Him to Lot and his sin of life, we see the differences otherwise in this respect. So 10, Abraham had his STA weaknesses in life, affecting decisions less than righteous, yet remained under God's geographical and directive will, continued to enjoy God's blessings. 11, only by understanding the distinction between reversionism and incidental sinning can the student of the Word of God recognize how and why God can show favor to one believer as if he's partial almost. But he's not. But to show grace or favor to one believer and not another, with both guilty of personal sin in life, and here even the same kind of sin, fear. The example here is fear. See? 12, for one, it is sin perpetuated, remiss of spiritual advance and orientation. That's reversionism. The other, it is simply an isolated, quote, stumbling, end quote, on the glory road, which James himself states in James 3:2, we all stumble in many ways. See? We all stumble in many ways. So, before we do chapter 20, we're going to review the doctrine of reversionism so that we have fresh in our minds, clearly in our thinking, the impact of sin on the two levels that the believer priest may find themselves in their life. That's either as a justice or as a reversionist.